values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Styx and REO Speedwagon are heading to the Option Pavilion on July 20th for their live and unzoomed tour. Tickets are on sale right now, but you could win a pair of tickets by visiting the contest page over at KTAR.com. Appreciate you being here. Want to go over a conversation I had a little earlier. I was talking with Kristen Benson. Kristen is a frequent guest on the show because I just think she's brilliant. You and I, we will talk about our personal economy. She has been predicting things so right since the beginning of COVID when her and I were talking actually about what was happening. And then the supply chain issues is when we really ramped up our conversations behind the scenes. I've known Kristen for a long time. And she began telling me, hey, listen, this major port, the largest port in the entire world, shut down in China. And this is going to be an issue. This is going to be a huge issue for the United States. And sure enough, a few weeks later, we were hearing about supply chain issues. So that's what she did for a living for such a long time, making those predictions in the retail world of telling investors this is what's coming. And she's been spot on with everything. So Kristen and I had conversations. We had conversations about inflation, about what was happening. And I asked her right out of the gate, I said, first of all, define a recession. What is a recession? And are we in one? Here's what she said.
A technical recession is 3/4 of negative GDP. Okay, so that's negative gross domestic product. We're about there. I personally, because I tend to see things earlier, because I came out of the retail industry where your horizon is about 6 months out, 8 months out, what I'm seeing in consumer behavior, the way stocks are reacting, the way people...
All right, so I don't know what happened to the rest of that, but she was talking about she believes that we are in one. And again, for me, when I hear recession, it's a technical term in the sense that we throw it around as criticism for the way the economy is going. But what does it really mean to the average person? And to be honest, we are going to probably not be hit as hard in Arizona with a recession as other places. If layoffs come along with that, if work slowdowns happen with that, there are businesses that are already beginning to do that. They're laying people off. But the other aspect of this is that on Wall Street, we now have seen the stock market have the first half of the year had the worst first half of the year since 1970. So I asked her about confidence because Wall Street looks again, they are always looking ahead. They don't react like you and I do, most people anyway. There are some that are as good at it as Wall Street experts, where they see things before they happen. The best way I can analogy I can give is in the construction world. When I was in construction, and I have friends that still are, many times you can see where an issue is going to happen while looking at the blueprints. By looking at the timeline of how the job is going to be done, you can see and anticipate that's going to be an issue meeting that deadline, or this is where we're going to have problems. Because you've been doing it so long, you see what's coming. Other people that don't know that react when it happens, and that's not what Wall Street does. Wall Street predicts and they act before it happens. So I asked her, does Wall Street have confidence in this administration and in the Fed to fix this problem?
They have no confidence in the administration. So you have a feckless president, you have a feckless Fed, and when they first started raising rates last week, you saw the market kind of fly because they're like, okay, this is great. We're going to, wrap up inflation. We're going to tamp this stuff down. But I think the further out that you look at things and comments from our president saying consumers are just going to have to bear with gas inflation as long as it takes. Are you kidding me? No. So if you're looking at the markets today and for the week and for the year, they don't have confidence.
And so this is where the Wall Street thing plays in, is they are looking at the average consumer. They look at how we are going to respond to things. When the president of the United States makes a statement about that, as long as it takes, how long do you expect? I want you to hear this. This is President Biden. If you haven't already heard this, I think this was the soundbite of what inflation means to America. A reporter is asking the president, how long do you expect drivers to pay high gas prices? You're going to hear the question and his answer.
How long is it fair to expect American drivers to continue to pay a premium because of this war?
The second part of the question was, would it bring down the price?
Will it bring down prices? And The war has pushed prices up. They could go as high as $200 a barrel, some analysts think. How long is it fair to expect American drivers and drivers around the world to pay that premium for this war?
As long as it takes. Russia cannot, in fact, defeat Ukraine and move beyond Ukraine.
It is, when you hear something like that as a consumer, you're thinking, that's as long as it takes. And then we keep hearing about regulations and things of that nature are happening, and then they blame somebody else for the high gas prices. We heard him say yesterday when he was at that meeting and doing a press conference that it was Russia was the reason for the high gas prices. And that is why it is it scares people, because there is no end in sight. And this is not, no longer is this inconvenient. No longer is this making people angry. This is changing people's lives. And Wall Street's going to react. So, you know, again, am I predicting a crash? I'm not a doom and gloomer. I think America's always going to survive. I think that we are always going to thrive. There's always a comeback. I'm a long-term person myself. But as I get older, 55 years old now, as I get older, I look at the world and I think, you know, one of these things happens 10 years from now, I'm in trouble. You know, if 10 years from now this stuff starts happening and we see the worst half for the first part of the year since the 1970s or since 1970, you know, there are people right now in their mid-60s. There are people that are approaching their late 60s that are looking at that and saying, I got to keep working. I've got no choice. So this all works together, and when you hear somebody that's been in the Wall Street world forever, and the thing about Wall Street that I really like is that they are apolitical on Wall Street. They make money when there's a Democrat in office. They make money when there's a Republican in office. They made tons of dough. I mean, Wall Street made a lot of money when Barack Obama was president. They don't care about Republicans and Democrats. They care about policy. They care about policy that's going to help America grow. They care about policy that's going to make it easier for them to do business, for companies to do business. And when they see policies that aren't conducive to that, we have things like this happen. So, you know, it's hard to blame this on Russia. It's hard to blame it on COVID. But those are the things that we continue to hear. But when you have an expert like a Kristen Bentz come on and say, you know, you got a feckless president, you've got a feckless Fed, and Wall Street is looking at that and they have no longer have confidence that they're going to fix this problem. This could be a long-term problem. That doesn't mean there won't be a comeback. It just means we are going to be in this rocky road for quite a while. And it's something we all better be prepared for. At least I believe we should. Had a conversation earlier. We were talking about guns and the governor of New York. And some things that she said, and I only got to one thing that she said that I thought was outrageous about not having any data to back up wanting to take away concealed carry permits from people. She didn't have the data, but she wants to protect people. There's more that she said, and I think you need to hear it. And it is about, for me, it is about defending the Second Amendment, but it's more about defending good people who own firearms, because that's the firearms owners that I know. These are good people that want self-protection, and they're not looking for trouble. And I'm going to let you hear what she says about people that have or want concealed carry permits. We're going to let you hear some more of that next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I am an advocate for the Second Amendment. I'm a firearms owner, have been my entire adult life. My biggest issue with the anti-gun lobby and the anti-gun people is I believe that they are ignorant about guns and gun owners. And I think if you're going to be against something, you should at least know what you're against. Nothing is 100%, but you have the overwhelming evidence based on what's happening and what people say that they are against something that they don't know anything about. And one of the accusations about gun laws is that you are attacking the problem, believing it has to do with legal firearms owners when it doesn't at all. It's about people that shouldn't have guns. So I want you to hear just a couple of things. First, we're going to go. This is the governor of New York, because this all came from the idea that, you know, they have to issue concealed carry permits. You don't have to give the government a good reason because you want to have a concealed carry permit. You just have to fulfill the requirements. So she was asked about the notion that people are the problem and not guns. Here's what she said.
The people that are chairing this are saying it's not the guns that are a problem. It's the criminals that are using the guns that are the problem.
And here's what happens. You have 25% of gun violence cases, you know, shootings, are with stolen guns.
Yes.
They are stolen from legal gun owners who didn't properly lock them up or manage them. So we have to tighten up our laws. We will respond. We have a strategy. We've been involving legal experts from all over the country to make sure that we do the next steps to let New Yorkers know we're going to protect them.
Did anybody else giggle when she said that? They were stolen guns. They were stolen from legal gun owners who didn't properly lock them up or store them. Wouldn't it be amazing for this governor, if she had her purse stolen out of her car, that the police officer said, well, you should have locked that up. I mean, you didn't store it in the right place. It's your fault that you got robbed. You know, you didn't have the proper locks on the door of your house and they kicked your door in and they burglarized your house. That's your fault. You're the one that didn't properly store your things. Had you properly stored them? It is such a mind-numbing point of view. Again, someone, I don't think she's dumb. Obviously, she's the governor of a state. She's not a dumb person. She is completely ignorant. Completely ignorant about gun owners. And they said, what about people that believe they should be able to carry guns? What do you say?
Everybody in America recognizes that there's a problem with gun violence. And the people who cheer this, what they say, what they see is, look, there is a problem with gun violence. And I, as a law-abiding citizen, want to be able to hold a gun on my person so that I feel safer. What do you say to that individual?
I say that makes everyone else feel very unsafe. We don't know if you're provoked. You know, you're in a bar and you're having someone looks at your girlfriend or your boyfriend the wrong way. There are so many triggers. If someone wants to have a legal gun license protection in their home, that is their domain, they can do that. We've always allowed that, or for hunting and other purposes. But to think that someone would be able to do this on a subway in a crowded, tense situation during rush hour? No, we have a right to protect our citizens.
Doesn't a citizen have a right to protect themselves? This argument, it almost makes my head hurt to hear her say these things. I don't think that there is a higher level of ignorance about guns and gun owners. Anybody out there that is a gun owner, I'm a hothead. I mean, people that know me, I'm a hothead. I have absolutely no problem with confrontation when confrontation is necessary. No problem with an argument. I'm not violent, but I've got no problem with a confrontation. None whatsoever. I've gotten in arguments with strangers. I've gotten in arguments with people I knew. I've been in arguments with a lot of people. And I'm not a mean person, but I mean, I'm confrontational. I'm not someone to ignore someone being stupid. And if you say something stupid to me, I'm probably going to respond. I'm not proud of that about myself. I'm just being honest. I am very demonstrative, and I will speak up, and I have. I've never brandished a gun. Never even thought of it. I never thought, hey, you're looking at my girlfriend. I'm going to shoot that guy. That's what criminals do. That's what people with stolen guns do. That's what idiots do. Reasonable gun owners, far and away, are the safest people out there. You are safer. I feel safer. You know, I have a great neighbor. I should say neighbors. They're great people. But my buddy Paul that lives next door, we think a lot alike when it comes to firearms ownership and things of that nature. I feel good that he's next door if something were to happen. I'm not afraid because he owns guns. I feel better that he does. And that's the way most gun owners look at things. We don't ever want to use them. I'll be honest with you. Going to the range, cleaning my guns, and then going back to the range, I hope that is the only use I ever have for my firearms. But you have to be prepared. It is so foolish to say, and I'll use the fire analogy. Could you imagine being against fire extinguishers because you're not a professional firefighter and we protect the citizens? That's not your job. Let it burn until we get there. I mean, it's ridiculous. And here she is. Her mindset about guns is wrong. We've heard her talk about the guns themselves, but it's about people that own them. What if you're provoked? What if you're out at a bar and someone looks at your girlfriend? There's a lot of triggers. Are you joking? That's her opinion of people that own firearms and want to carry a concealed weapon. And it is a horrible way to think about the citizens of your state. But that is also a thought process that permeates everyone. If you own a gun, you're either paranoid or you're looking for trouble. The question, how many times? What do you need a gun for? Why do you need more than one gun? I don't know. Why does every girl I've ever gone out with own 85 pairs of black shoes? You know, why do you know, why does a woman own 4, 5, 6 purses? There's no answer to that. I want them. That's why. But the difference is guns kill. And they are only dangerous in the hands of dangerous people. And the reason why it makes me outraged isn't because I'm worried about my rights. It's not just that. It's you're attacking the wrong problem. Going after concealed carry permit holders, you don't think that with the crime rate in New York skyrocketing as it is, that innocent people should have a right to level that playing field and do it the right way, as opposed to the criminals that are out on your streets that are shooting people? There was a woman in the Upper East Side that was shot at point blank range pushing a baby stroller the other night. I'm pretty sure that wasn't a legal gun owner. It's just crazy. It is just outright crazy. We are going to continue our conversation with candidates. We are going to have an attorney general candidate join us from the Republican primary. Her name is Lacey Cooper. She is going to join us coming up here in a few moments to talk about that race. So stick around for it.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Happy Friday from the Mike Broomhead Show. I appreciate you spending some time with us this morning. We are continuing our interviews and talking with candidates on both sides of the aisle from all of the statewide races. So you can be an informed voter. You can go over to KTAR.com/Arizona Votes. And we have it's where all of our interviews, not just mine, but all of our interviews here are located there. So you can learn more about the candidates. We have some very, very important races here in the state of Arizona. And one of those races is the attorney general's race. Joining us right now is GOP candidate Lacey Cooper. Lacey, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Mike. Good to be on today.
Let's get an update on a couple of things, because there are no more hypotheticals. The Roe v. Wade thing that happened with being sent back to the states by the Supreme Court has got a lot of people confused about what the law of the land is. Our attorney general, the current attorney general, says we are defaulting back to a 1901 law. Let's start there. Do you believe that is the correct thing? And do you think that law is sufficient, or should we be going back to a law all the way back in 1901? Or should we have something else?
You know, it's interesting. The language of that law is a little strange because it is 120 years old. And so it's not as crisp and clear as a lot of the legislation that's been passed in the recent decades. But I do believe that is the law that is on the books right now. And the Arizona Attorney General has the duty to defend Arizona state law. And so that law is more restrictive than the 15-week bill that was passed. And because it's more restrictive, I think that means that it is the law that will be upheld.
But do you believe that this is just a personal belief? Do you think the legislature should, in the next legislative session, update that law?
I do, because, like I said, the language is a little strange. It doesn't say abortion, which has a legal definition in this state. It says miscarriage. And so I think that there could be some confusion without getting some clarity in the language to mesh with a lot of the laws that have been passed more recently.
All right, so let's shift to the other Supreme Court decision that really affects us, and that is the one that would allow, that says the president has the right to end the Remain in Mexico policy. If that happens, there's the expectation that what's already horrible at the border could get much worse. Looking at that from your point of view, if you're attorney general, what does that motivate you to do? What can you do? What should you do as attorney general to address that issue?
Oh, well, I was the border security section chief in the U.S. Attorney's Office under the Trump administration when President Trump rolled out the Remain in Mexico program. I loved that program. It was so effective at deterring folks from coming to the United States and crossing illegally to make a bogus asylum claim. It just almost stopped that type of migrant flow to our border, and it was only folks who had legitimate asylum claims who were coming. It was a highly effective program. The Biden administration got rid of it. Now, let me just analyze that opinion just a little bit. The language of the law says that the federal government may use that program. May means discretionary. You know, it's up to the federal government whether they want to use it or not. But there was a ton of discussion in the opinion and also at oral argument about the interplay with this statute, which says may, and another statute, which says that you shall detain migrants. And so even the dissent in this case, which was Alito and Thomas, they said, how is it that you are choosing not to do the thing that you are compelled to do, which is you shall detain, and say, but I don't want to do the thing that will help, you know, alleviate the problem, which is may use the Remain in Mexico program. So what I see is a pathway now for attorneys general around the country to get together and pursue a lawsuit up to the Supreme Court to compel the federal government to detain migrants. And if that means that they decide that they want to use Remain in Mexico again to send some folks, you know, out of the detention facilities and back to Mexico, they will have the discretion to do that. But there'll be a lot more pressure on them to reinstitute that program if they're required to detain migrants.
You alluded to this in just a moment ago with where you worked or what you have done previously. But we've been asking, you know, because most of the people in this race on the GOP side agree on the issues. I mean, we all do. We're on the same side of the aisle. But what is it that uniquely qualifies you for this job over your other primary opponents?
Well, I'm an expert on border security. I spent, you know, 8 years in the trenches actually doing the work as the border security section chief. I worked hand in hand with our border patrol agents, our ICE officers, the OFO officers at the ports to deter people from coming to the country, prosecuting migrants crossing illegally, prosecuting the coyotes bringing them here, prosecuting the drug traffickers bringing drugs across our border and the cartels. I'm the only candidate in the race who has that experience. And, you know, frankly, the border security is the number one issue facing our state and our country today. And I believe that is why I am uniquely qualified to take on the position of attorney general and fight back against the Biden administration's open border policies. And Border Patrol agrees that I'm the right candidate, which is why I've gotten the endorsement of the National Border Patrol Council.
I appreciate the time whenever you come on, and I hope you'll come back before the primary, because I want people to hear from the candidates like yourself so they're informed voters. If they want to learn more about your campaign, where do they go and how do they find you? Social media, website, whatever it is.
My website is LaceyCooper4AZ.com. That's F-O-R-A-Z.com. I have a five-part series on immigration reform on my website and links to all my social media. So, yes, follow me and check out my website, my background, and my statements on the issues.
I appreciate the time, and I hope you got have a great Independence Day weekend.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. That's Lacey Cooper, candidate, GOP candidate in the primary for attorney general. We are going to continue to have on the other candidates between now and the primary, which is rapidly approaching. With these important races, if you look at the five in-state races and the federal, the one for Mark Kelly's seat in the Senate, those five races, the governor's office, the secretary of state's office, who is first, not only runs elections, but is first in line to be the governor if the governor leaves office. Then you've got the attorney general's office, you've got the superintendent of public schools, and you also have the treasurer's office. Those five races and who wins those races in the end could dramatically shift the way Arizona goes, the direction we take. Whether you agree with it or not, good or bad, that's how serious this is with these five races right now and the direction Arizona is going. You have to make your voice heard. I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent. It's more important now than ever that we have our voices heard. And I just want you to be an informed voter. I'm going to make my choices, obviously, based on what I know of candidates as everything approaches. But you should do the same thing. Get all the information. Don't just listen to me. When you hear a candidate on here, go listen to other interviews and do some research, because these choices are going to really, really affect who we are as a state. In a moment, A pair of Arizona lawmakers have now been subpoenaed by the FBI. We're going to tell you who they are and why coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. We've got in Arizona. I've been very clear about the audit in Arizona. Wasn't a big fan of how it was run. I don't like the companies that ran it. But I didn't disagree with an audit in Arizona. I thought that there are enough people on both sides of the aisle. I just had a conversation with a Secretary of State candidate, Adrian Fontes, who's on the opposite side of me politically. And we had an argument, a debate on air about it. It didn't start that way. It wasn't the way either one of us wanted it to go. But we ended up talking about what happened on January 6th and what's going on and trying to overthrow the government. And those are my words. He didn't say that. But that was the position is and how horrible January 6th was. But I did bring up to him and I said, wait a minute. Hillary Clinton said a week ago, we will never know the truth about 2016. Now, he was right in replying, but they did not have a concerted movement that tried to stop the certification of an election. 100% right in that regard. But both sides of the aisle have doubts about the safety, security, and veracity of our elections at one time or another. Now, I have my opinions on how that goes, and I think they're very similar. I will say that I think the reason why Hillary Clinton and a lot of people on the left side of the aisle for years, there were investigations in D.C. for 3.5 years minimum into the president of the United States at that time, Donald Trump, because of Russian collusion and all this other stuff. And not one shred of evidence ever came to light. Not one. But there are still people on the left that believe the election was stolen. And it's because to the naked eye, it doesn't make sense. There was not many people that thought that Donald Trump could beat Hillary Clinton. There was most people didn't think anybody could beat Hillary Clinton. When there was a bunch of people sitting around and they were asked how many of you, and these were radio people, how many of you believe that Donald Trump is going to win the election? Only one person raised his hand, and it wasn't me. I thought for sure Hillary Clinton was going to win that election. The naked eye said so. She was the heir apparent. She was the one that should have won that election. And that was what everybody thought. So when she didn't, there had to be something nefarious that made that happen. Fast forward to 2020, and at least here in Arizona, I can tell you the naked eye looked like Donald Trump was going to win Arizona by 20 points. There were parades or whatever you want to call them of people driving along the 101 in our freeways for weeks. Every time there was a Trump rally, whether the president was there or not, anytime there was a rally, thousands of people were showing up. There were Trump flags and all this stuff everywhere in Arizona. And when Biden was here or somebody on behalf of the Biden administration was here, they were doing these drive-up rallies because of COVID and four cars would show up. And it, to the naked eye, it looked like Joe Biden didn't have a prayer in Arizona. We woke up and the election went to Biden. So I can understand why people doubted and do doubt what's going on in the election. And then the way it's been handled, I get it. I get it. But I have to be honest. We haven't seen, I know other people say they've seen proof. I haven't seen proof. And I'm not talking about 2,000 mules. I'm not talking about the conjecture of look what happened here. I'm talking about proof. The president of the United States, through his attorney Rudy Giuliani, said they had names of thousands of people that cheated in the Arizona election. Rusty Bowers, the Speaker of the House, said he never saw that. Someone's lying. Someone is lying. But all of that to say this. The FBI has subpoenaed Senate President Karen Fann and Senator Kelly Townsend's information on the January 6th incident. President Fann received an FOIA, which is a Freedom of Information Act, in the form of a subpoena by the FBI as part of the Biden administration's political theatrics as they look into January 6th. This is a quote. This is the director of communications from the Arizona Senate Republicans. Nonetheless, President Fann is fully cooperating in releasing whatever emails, text messages they are requesting. My issue with all of this is it continues. And I'm trying to be as intellectually honest and fair as I can in all of it. we continue as a state to have a huge number of people. I am in the minority in my own party of people that are saying we have got to move on from 2020. And that I haven't seen evidence that the election was stolen. I get messages from my friends all the time who I still love dearly. I still think the world of them. And hopefully they still think that of me. We got to move on. We have this huge election that is right around the corner, a primary election and then a general election in November. I just ran down in the last segment about the five offices that are in state seats and then Mark Kelly's Senate seat. We have got these huge elections that are running right now. And when they say, well, if it's not fair, well, the problem with that is what if people don't vote because they don't believe the elections are going to be fair? If it's people on our side of the aisle that believe this, why would you vote if it's not a fair election? That's my fear, that by default, we're not going to show up at the polls in enough in mass to win an election. And then what happens if a candidate loses in a primary and they say that their race was stolen and they start lawsuits? What if it happens on the other side of the aisle? Let's say, because it's a possibility that because of the red wave that's happening across the country and the disappointment in the policies of the Biden administration, that could spill over into the state races. What if Republicans win all six of those offices? What if we have a Republican governor, Republican secretary of state, attorney general, superintendent, and treasurer? And Mark Kelly gets upset or gets beaten and we have a Republican take his seat. What if that happens? And then what if the Democrats say, well, you're right. Our elections weren't fair. We think they're rigged just like they were rigged against you. We think you rigged the election. And now we're back to that again. At what point do we do something that election integrity is satisfactory to the vast majority of us? What do we do to make it fair in that regard? We're not going to get rid of mail-in voting. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's too popular. It's been used for too long, and it's going to be used. So with that in mind, what do we do? How do we secure mail-in voting or early voting? It's a valid question, and we are rapidly approaching the primary. Why are we not answering it? Coming up just after 11 o'clock, we're going to go back to the border issue. We've had conversations. We had one with Jonathan Lyons. We've had with others, with people. What's going on at the border next?